It's time for the SwampSwamiSports.com audio podcast.
And now, here's that man with all the wisdom of bygone ages, Mr. Know-It-All.
Thank you, and hello, used wisdom lovers everywhere.
And welcome back to the Swamp Swami Sports audio podcast. Today we're going to take a deep look into the business of professional golf. This is part one of a two-part series. As compared to labor disputes involving other professional sports businesses, professional golf has been a relative oasis of calm and peace for several decades now. The PGA Tour has been steady as a rock in featuring many of the most talented professional golfers in the world every season and without any significant controversies. Beginning with the Arnold Palmer era to Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino, Tom Watson, and more recently Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods, the PGA Tour has satisfied golf fans and provided significantly increased payouts to the professional golfers since the late 1960s. And it wasn't very easy to make enough money to be a full-time touring professional prior to those 1960s. The touring professionals of that era were once part of a larger group called the PGA of America. The easiest way to distinguish these two entities is to remember that the majority of the 29,000 members of the PGA of America work at the private country clubs and public golf facilities around the country. These golfers that we see on television every weekend are part of a separate group now known as the PGA Tour, but it wasn't always that way. Here's some helpful history. Founded in 1916, over a century ago, the PGA of America now employs tens of thousands of men and women in a variety of roles associated with the game of golf. There are 18 universities in the United States which now offer the PGA's golf management program to standardize and develop the skills necessary to operate golf courses and help teach the game to the general public. Near the end of the PGA of America's first year of operation, way back in October 1916, the very first PGA Championship golf tournament was also held for the group's teaching professionals. Now, this tournament featured prize money of $2,580. That's the total prize money. And a very large trophy, both of which were provided by a New York City golf retailer named Rodman Wanamaker. Wanamaker? That name's familiar. Yeah, Mr. Wanamaker's name still adorns the PGA Championship trophy over a century later. How's that for a good advertising gimmick? During the PGA of America's formative years, golf professionals earned the majority of their income from their employment by those local country clubs, which kept them on the payroll year-round. As more and more golf tournaments were held among the club professionals, the nation's best golf pros were lured to work for the most prestigious country clubs who offered them, you got it, more money. With the publicity generated by winning one of the very limited amount of major golf tournaments held annually, including the U.S. Open, country club professionals parlayed their golf skills on the course into higher annual wages as a host professional for one of the most prestigious country clubs. For the next 40 years, all the way into the 1950s, the prize money being offered at most local golf tournaments was simply not high enough to entice the majority of those club professionals to abandon their day jobs and travel at their own expense to another tournament stop. Unless you were independently wealthy, the great majority of professional golfers who did travel to those tournaments traveled in the same car and shared expenses just in order to make ends meet. Enter Arnold Daniel Palmer and television. Coming onto the professional golf scene after a successful college career at Wake Forest University, the Pennsylvania native Arnold Palmer passed up a career in selling paint for his father-in-law to take his chances at becoming a touring golf professional during the mid and late 1950s. And back then, most pro golfers had trouble just breaking even financially on this fledgling golf tour. A top 10 finish was pretty much needed every week just to break even due to the relatively small prize money being offered by the tournaments. But once black and white television cameras found this handsome, young, go-for-broke golfer named Arnold Palmer, professional golf finally seemed to take off. The tournament purses started to rise quickly as television viewers became more and more interested in the game. As Arnold Palmer racked up the wins during the late 1950s and all the way through the 60s, Jack Nicklaus showed up to crash Arnie's army of fans and provide some needed competition. The likable Gary Player's golf talent and gritty style of play earned him a spot in this evolving Big Three of golf during the 1960s. This popular golfing trio also cashed in on their own popularity with a unique made-for-television golf series called Big Three Golf. That program, along with Shell's Wonderful World of Golf exhibitions, attracted millions more television viewers. And around this same time, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player all realized that the longtime organizational structure of the PGA of America was unable to accommodate the growing needs of its touring golf professionals. For perspective on how things have changed over time, it took Arnold Palmer more than 11 years on the tour and 48 professional victories of his 62 total during his career to pass $1 million in career earnings in 1967. And by contrast, last weekend's U.S. Open winner Matthew Fitzpatrick pocketed more than $3 million for winning just one tournament last week. By late 1968, the PGA of America and its group of touring pro golfers finally came to a new agreement. A new PGA Tournament Players Division was formed for the touring professionals, but by 1975, they decided to change the name to just the PGA Tour. And yes, the PGA Tour developed a number of additional golf tournaments, handled the corporate sponsorships, and negotiated TV deals, which covered the cost of operations. Today's PGA Tour, which plays 46 weekends per year, also owns the rights to the biennial President's Cup. However, the PGA Tour that we see on television does not own or control those four major championships called the Masters, PGA Championship, US Open, and the British Open. That original organization called the PGA of America still exists for the local club professionals and also, importantly, retains control of the annual PGA Championship golf tournament. The original golf group also owns half of the value of the biennial Ryder Cup competition, and that's quite lucrative too. The money generated by those two events alone helps to assist the 29,000 local golf professionals and golf courses of the PGA of America to grow the game of golf. And speaking of money, the PGA Tour, the tour players, at the behest of one Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer, also started its own dandy retirement system for the touring professional golfers beginning in 1983. The PGA Tour's deferred money system is based on the golfer's number of cuts. Now, a cut is making the top half of the field after the first two rounds of play. The cuts which the professional golfer makes each year determines how much money is put into his deferred money retirement program. Now, this deferred money, estimated to be about $4,000 per made cut in recent years, is placed into a special investment account for the golfer. And the player will accumulate interest on this account and may begin to collect the money from it by the age of 50, unless that player is still actively playing on the PGA Tour or the PGA Champions or Senior Tour. But by 60, all players are able to withdraw up to the current federal legal limit in that account, and that's currently estimated to be about $210,000 per year. Not too bad.
Yes!
According to one report, the PGA golfer becomes 50% vested in his special cuts made retirement account once he has made a total of 75 cuts during his golfing career. He becomes 100% vested in the account after making 150 cuts. A 2019 report indicated that over 500 PGA golfers had already accumulated a minimum of $500,000 in their deferred made cuts retirement account. And within that group, 345 PGA players had balances in excess of $1 million available for their retirement. Now, this funding is separate from any money they've earned by playing golf tournaments on the tour or paid by the corporate sponsors they might have. Beginning in 2007, a second deferred income retirement stream was added for these PGA players. With the inception of the season-long FedEx Cup point system, this additional player deferred bonus program added a new layer of retirement income for the golfers. The player's portion of this new year-end FedEx bonus money can be accessed by the player as early as age 45 if that player has not participated in 15 or more PGA events during the previous year. Now, the PGA Tour prides itself on paying money for performance. If a PGA Tour player does not make a cut during a tournament week, that player heads home without any money earned from playing the first two rounds of the tournament, along with no bonus money put into their deferred retirement plans. In case you might be wondering, the Women's Golf Tour, the LPGA, also has a deferred retirement fund for its membership. The good news is that the LPGA's retirement bonus system has been around since 1980, 3 years before the PGA golfers was. The bad news, though, is that the league's financial woes have been so severe over the last 25 years that the majority of today's retired aged women players have funds in those accounts less than $100,000 apiece. The LPGA Tour has struggled for years to build fan support and secure any type of network television deal, and especially had trouble during the height of the Tiger Woods era. The women's tour, though, has become more popular in recent years, so perhaps the league's retirement funding issues will now improve for the current crop of golfers by the time they've reached retirement age. Now back to men's golf. The PGA Tour now features an average of $7 million in weekly prize money at every tournament. The FedEx point system has added even more cash to the top 125 players' retirement accounts, too. The players continue to earn retirement money for the number of made cuts every season as well. The earnings from winning on the PGA Tour, plus the improved retirement funding and the lucrative commercial sponsorship opportunities for the top tier of men's professional golfers, has never been better than it is today. So why would a new Saudi-backed golf group called the LIV Tour be able to lure a growing number of the PGA Tour's biggest names in 2022? Now, some believe it has to do with playing in fewer tournaments every year, which pay significantly more money at each tournament, and a minimum payday is guaranteed for each player regardless of how he finishes in that tournament. According to Phil Mickelson, this also may have something to do with the PGA Tour being a virtual monopoly for a long, long time. Phil believes that the PGA Tour has been quietly sitting on a very large pile of cash, which should have been paid out to the tour's most popular golfers, which would, of course, include Phil Mickelson. What in the name of Arnie's Army is happening to professional golf right now? Now that we've examined the evolution of pay for the professional golfers over the last 60 years, let's take a closer look at the lure and future impact of this new upstart LIV golf tour and recent countermeasures which have been enacted by the PGA Tour in my next post. I'm Swamp Swami. Hit 'em down the middle.